Where does the avionics industry stand with FAA regulators? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. At last week's 54th Annual International Convention and Trade Show of the Aircraft Electronics Association, I got to spend about 20 minutes talking with Rick Perry, who is AEA's Vice President for Government and Industry Affairs. The only thing I appreciate more than Rick's firm grasp of regulatory issues is his candor in explaining them. You'll hear this conversation over 2 days. My first question for Rick dealt with safety management systems, which had been mandated by the U.S. Congress for airline avionics repair facilities, but which, as part of a larger knee-jerk, may also be coming to one- or two-man avionics shops. The regulatory burden could be considerable if that happens. This was a front-burner issue a year ago. Where do things stand now?
Well, the issue has been changed a bit since last year. As you know, Congress had mandated that air carriers implement an SMS program. And so the FAA has gone with an NPRM specifically focused on 121 air carriers. It doesn't mean the other certificate holders are scot-free yet, but the focus right now is with the air carriers. The NPRM is closed, comments have been submitted, and we're going to move forward on it. Then we anticipate the FAA will probably put together a rulemaking committee to look at the other certificate holders, 135, 145, schools, anybody who holds a certificate. It'll be interesting to see how the FAA has addressed some of the comments that were submitted. The cost-benefit analysis isn't directly related to regulations or safety, but rather the indirect benefit of efficiency at the air carrier level that doesn't translate into a small business or a single siloed type organization. Some of the challenges, the FAA's proposal on SMS has some direct conflicts with labor negotiations. The airline's practice of having seniority be the primary factor for route selection for pilots, for flight crews, for mechanics that are working different shifts, those all could be in direct conflict to a company's risk assessment under an SMS program. And the FAA hasn't addressed which one will take precedence. So there's some questions that have been raised during this proposal that the FAA is going to have a hard time answering if we're going to move forward in a safe and risk minimal approach.
Well, now this is a fascinating political issue too, because this administration, conspicuously so compared to the past administration, is union friendly. I mean, what we've seen happen, you know, the whole mess between the air traffic controllers and the FAA seemed to just kind of disappear overnight once Randy Babbitt got in, and with his background and obvious marching orders. I would almost hate to be at the FAA right now and be between those two stones.
If they answer those questions, they're going to be very challenging, because if, in fact, negotiated labor agreements preempt risk assessment and risk management, then SMS has failed before it ever started. If SMS takes precedence over labor negotiations, then labor negotiations are in jeopardy. And so the FAA is really between a rock and a hard spot on this one, and it's going to be a real challenge to see exactly how they address this in the final rule.
Since we've gone down this road, let's talk about the FAA's current situation, because as much as it's fun to just dismiss them as a big heartless bureau, they do have some legitimate challenges right now, one of which is what are we up to now, 19 extensions, temporary extensions of FAA reauthorization. I've talked to some folks in other segments of the industry who detect a kind of emerging bunker mentality at some of the bureaus that have to move things at the FAA that, you know, in some cases they've lost personnel to retirement. They can't replace them right now. And should we feel any empathy toward these guys?
Absolutely. The FAA is our partner in aviation, and we work hand in hand. We banter back and forth on issues, and we enjoy it, and it's good work. They do their job, we do our job. But at the end of the day, we really are partners in aviation safety. Anytime you work for a company where you have an inconsistent funding mechanism, the stress within the company, the human factors stress within that company, is just miserable. It's not a fun place to work. It's a challenging place. We should give them a lot of latitude right now. And one of the challenges are is that you walk around the floor here, the technologies that are being introduced, the new products that were covered yesterday, the FAA doesn't have the money to send their engineers to see what the new technology is, but yet they have to be our partners moving ahead to install it in a low-cost mechanism to the general aviation public. We can't continue this way. They have to have training money. They have to have the ability to see the products. Technology is changing too fast, and the FAA really has to spend the time and effort to come on board with it.
I know that's been a big big problem the last 4 or 5 years in the flight instruction community. Finding a flight instructor who is able to teach you how to run your G-1000, and then finding a designated pilot examiner or FAA inspector who knows what questions to ask once you get up in the air. Do you see any relief from this? Because this is only going to accelerate.
Unfortunately, I don't. I think what we're going to see specifically in avionics is a reliance on designees. The approval processes are going to be more and more driven into the delegation process, because it's the delegated people that will have the time and invest the money to stay current. Unfortunately, as you know from year to year being here on the floor, you can't afford to miss a year. And when you have somebody within the FAA who is working 8, 10, 12-hour days already doing administrative work, losing a little bit of contact with technology, and you have a new touchscreen unit come out, doesn't even look like the equipment they worked on before they joined the agency, their abilities to support the industry are going to become more and more diminished, and it's going to push more and more into the delegation process and essentially create a commercial approval process for a lot of the installations we do.
More with Rick Perry from AEA 2011 in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Freedom through performance. At Cirrus, performance is not simply the measurement of a single design parameter. Rather, it's a total package. It's optimum balance of speed, efficiency, comfort, safety, ease of flight, and quality. We call it Cirrus Flying 2.0. Aren't you ready to feel the freedom?
Piperjet.
Piper Match.
Global Expansion.
Meridian, Mirage, Matrix, and more.
With so much happening at Piper, how can I possibly keep up?
Get informed. Get involved at facebook.com/Piper Aircraft.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. I'm Paul Plack, talking with Rick Perry of AEA about the regulatory issues facing the avionics industry in the U.S. Having discussed SMS, training, and technology, I wanted to get an update on some next-gen technologies, specifically ADS-B. In the past year, private industry seems to have gained more appreciation for the benefits of ADS-B, as evidenced by the growth in the installed base, where before it seemed the FAA was pushing on a string. What are the challenges moving ADS-B forward?
ADS-B will be a challenge. ADS-B, unlike any other product we've had to date, is a performance-based TSO. And it's a TSO that relies on multiple elements. A transmitter of some sort, a position source, and an altitude source. And these have to be married. In order to do that, there are some manufacturers who will produce a single box that meets the standard, and the installation of that single box, if you will, a transponder, will be simplified. On the other hand, when you have a transmitter interfaced to another manufacturer's position source, connected to another manufacturer's altitude source, the installer ends up having to certify the entire system unique to that airplane. The challenge with that is the FAA doesn't have the assurance at this point that they've done their homework right or that we're doing the installation right. And as a result of that, they're pushing the entire ADS-B system into STCs right now. So what that means is that if somebody's interested in being proactive and putting the next ADS-B system in their airplane, there's going to be about a $35,000 premium to get it certified. Getting people to step up to the plate to spend an extra $35,000 is a little tough in this economy. AEA has been working with various organizations to find some grant money to do the first generation of installations through our shops. And we're looking forward to that, and we're hopeful that over the next probably 12 to 18 months, and hopefully by convention next year, we'll be able to announce a program to where the certification's costs are offset by hopefully grant money.
Rick Perry is Vice President for Government and Industry Affairs for the Aircraft Electronics Association. Find out more about the organization on the web at AEA.net. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.